16 months into making. Welcome to Reality NSFW. I am your host for tonight, Alex Trias, and I am here with a very special guest while Johnny and Matt are out partying out in Louisville. If you aren't there, you should be there. But we got ourselves a Survivor legend, a friend of the podcast, a friend of Johnny, so he's a friend of mine. He was on Survivor Africa and Survivor All-Stars. My friend, Lex Vandenberg. Lex, how are you doing?
Alex, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. And what an auspicious episode of Survivor NSFW for me to be a guest on. I feel honored that I get to kind of christen this new season and kick you guys off for what is arguably the most anticipated season of Survivor ever. Considering, you know, people have never had to wait this long, especially during a year and a half that was an absolute shit show of a dumpster fire. I mean, if we ever needed a new season of Survivor, it was last year, but you know, good things come to those who wait. So here we are.
Absolutely. And really, broad strokes of this episode, I thought it was a very good premiere. Didn't feel like 2 hours. We got a lot of personal information from these people, even people that went home this episode. Some surprising boots. And, you know, we started out with Jeff Probst. And who else but Jeff Probst talking to the audience, breaking that fourth wall immediately, and well, just saying like, yo, welcome
that
back.
That was one of my very first impressions was, and I guess he wasn't technically breaking the fourth wall, he's breaking the third wall. Because I think breaking the fourth wall, if I understand it correctly, is when you look directly into the camera and talk to the camera.
Right.
But he shattered that third wall. And in ways that we've never seen him do it. I mean, I think this might be the very first time, and I was frankly pretty shocked about it, but I think this might be the very first time that in an actual episode of Survivor that they showed us a shot that included the film crew.
Yeah.
Like, and it was totally deliberate. And this is something back in my day that they went out of their way to hide. In fact, back when I first did it on Africa, there was this, you know, people watching weren't even sure if it was live or not. A lot of people thought it was live. And I remember, you know, Jeff and Mark Burnett, they really wanted to encourage, they wanted to encourage that kind of mistaken impression that the game was live, because they thought it kept people really in the moment. So they were super secretive and guarded about anything that involved, you know, us talking about the crew or what happened back there. And in fact, they, you know, there was no social media back then, but they wanted us to keep a low profile because people really thought it was live. And here they literally shattered that third wall. And then on top of it, as we were getting just to know some of the players when they were on that barge, it was also interesting to me that, you know, Jeff was asking them questions about how long have you been watching Survivor? And, you know, what is your You know, what is your experience as an audience member? Again, that was just, it was kind of peeling everything that was game away for a moment. And it was talking about the game, you know, and that seemed really strange to me. So I think, you know, Jeff made it pretty clear with that. And he made it clear that it was, that this is a whole new game and a whole new approach to Survivor. And then he doubled down on that when he actually asked the players for feedback on the come on in guys line, which most consider Jeff, you know, tried and true 21-year-old script lines. That's sacred ground. And Jeff was maintenance there and saying, you know what, things are so different now that I used to be the god of this show, and players weren't to have an opinion about stuff. But I'm actually now going to ask you guys to tell me, do you like or don't like what I'm doing? And if you don't, I'm going to change it. That's, again, totally unprecedented. So Jeff's coming out the gate here, you know, letting all of us know at home that you can't count on anything anymore. Everything's going to be totally different.
Right. Like he said, like, if you didn't know that already by everything that you just said, when one of his final lines before they do the first challenge, he goes to them and says, You see that 41 on your buff. You see it on the flags. You see it everywhere. You drop the four. It's a one. 40 seasons have been great. This is a new era right now. This is what we're starting. And you can see just by how much he's very much wanting to make all these changes and all these things. It's a rapid game. It's a shorter game. You have no food. You have to fight for your supplies. You can lose your supplies. It a lot is on the table here. But I, you know, for now, I'm good with it. I think it's going to be very interesting to see this pace of play, this style of editing that they're doing and producing. Love them shouting out the production. You don't need it every episode, but having it on this episode, I think, was important because they have just as much of a factor and as much at stake as the players themselves who all took this time to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of that. I'd say, you know, my and I bring, you know, as I wear my old school t-shirt. Thank you, Ethan. You know, I bring my old school kinds of, you know, my old school mind and the way that I interpret this new school or whatever you'd call it, future school. I don't know what we'd call it now, because this may well not fit into kind of like what we've been calling new school. This might be something totally different. But my impression is, yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty exhilarating. It's going to be a fun, fast ride. But I definitely feel every bit of me inside just saying nope when every time they Jeff brings out some kind of new twist. It's like he didn't just bring out one new twist. And by twist, I mean stuff that will severely affect and influence the results of the game.
Yes.
There wasn't just one. There were like two or three or four, I don't know, five maybe this episode. And I was like, I'm all, pace yourself, Jeff. Whoa, dude, that's way too many twists.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm a guy that I've been really clamoring and just aching to see Survivor go back to its mm-hmm. original old school roots, stripped down where it's just 16 or 18 people. There's reward challenge, immunity challenge, tribal council, and that's it. And it's that leaves everybody with only their wits, their social game, their strategy, and their bodies to get
right
in and out of trouble. But now we've got, I mean, there were all of these like mini challenges. I mean, there must have been, I think there were four challenges if you count everything in this game. There was
yep.
the initial boat challenge, you had the beach challenge, you had the visit to the island for the three of them, and then you had a immunity challenge. And that's not all of the twists. There's an idol, there's the shot in the dark. There was also some kind of, unless I missed it, and keep me honest here, but there was also, they showed what looked to be like a piece of parchment at the immunity challenge that looked like a puzzle legend at one point. Did you notice that?
I think I may have missed that just because I was so frantically like going back and forth.
There's so much. And I think it's like, it ain't too much, it's three much. I just think that the twists, it's like, you just got to pace yourself. And I feel like this is going to be, we're going to get to the point where it'll be impossible to place odds on any player, regardless of how well they're playing, because there are going to be so many factors that have that really have nothing to do with each player's relationships, social game, or athletic ability, or anything. There's going to be a lot of kind of what I feel is like rolling of the dice and, oh, did you happen to, you know, look for something, or did you find
right
something? Or did you go on one of these mini challenges that completely, you know, turned the game on its head? It's like that to me is like, it might be really fun initially. It's like instant gratification,
mm-hmm.
but it's, to me, it doesn't have the same substance as a game that you can follow over like 13 episodes where
yep.
you can see people building a game and a strategy and others that are building their game and strategy to combat the one that's against them. And you can see the work that's being put in it. Whereas here it's like every episode, well, it's now we're down to what? We're down to 16 players. It's anybody's game again. And every
yep.
episode, it'll be anybody's game again. You know?
Yeah, you're right. This season is definitely going to be more of a crapshoot than we've seen. The two people who went home tonight on paper when everyone was making their predictions in the community, these weren't the two names that were coming up. So it's like, it is like the quote, the challenge, it's been a shot in the dark for the viewers to figure out who's going home. But we will start like going unpacking all this, we do see that first twist that you mentioned, while he's breaking the third wall, he puts that little advantage. It sounded like he said it was a beware advantage, but I don't know if it was that or a hidden immunity aisle. He hides that in all three camps. We see Tiffany almost find it, but completely just missed not looking into it. Someone is going to find it. We know that. It's a checkoff thing. But yeah, we get to the barge, and I loved all the stories hearing from everyone. Just like how much of a fan they are, how amped they are. Some people made some mistakes, I feel, in there. Like, if I'm like Erica, I would not have said I was supposed to be here last year, but this guy can't. So, because some of these people were not on that original cast. But so knowing that, that already for me would be like, oh, easy boot. She was already supposed to be on. So they saw something in her.
You know that they were just they were so like running on just adrenaline and, you know, excitement that at that moment, more than half of them probably didn't have their heads on straight.
Right.
So, so anybody that was smart enough to really be thinking and watching and observing, you know, body English on everybody and whatnot, might have gotten some good intel on that barge.
Right. But I think like the most, like, I don't know, it was like, for me, the most heartwarming one was Nasir talking about how like he basically learned the English language because he watched Survivor. It's like Jeff Probst's his dictionary. It's a cool story, and like it can be heartwarming, especially if you can get deep in the game and people remember that. It's like you want to give it to someone that you like or you have like that empathy for. And I think these stories are a good way, not just for the players, but the viewers, to gain empathy for these players and see them more as people rather than just characters on our screen.
Yep. And I have to say, you know, as I'm looking through my notes here, but one of the things that I just have to mention, speaking of Nasir, is we have never seen a cast as diverse as this one. So I have to say, you know, two things. First of all, I have to say, bravo to the casting department, because I really feel that we have a super exciting cast of people, and they don't feel like so many of the recent past seasons where everyone looked like they could be, you know, a supermodel or an aspiring actor or actress. You've got every sort of different kind of person out there. And then that leads me to the kind of the more important point, is that we finally have a truly diverse cast of survivors that reflect the society that we all live in terms of, you know, racial diversity, representatives of the LGBTQ community. And I love that every time I see even a small group of these players, I'm seeing all the colors of the rainbow in every single scene. And I love that. I just cannot tell you how much I applaud Jeff and Burnett and the casting crew of Survivor for having finally done the right thing.
I absolutely agree. Like the work that was done in this past calendar year between them and some of the people of color, alumni of Survivor, and the work that they collaborated on to ensure this was an agenda, I'm all for it. It represents our times today, but it gives me as well, it's interesting. It gives me old school vibes with new school game. And I think that's like the perfect mix. You're getting the characters again. You're not getting actors, and like you're getting fans who are there to play. They're not there to just exist on the camera. This game's going crazy, and it goes crazy right away because they push them into their first challenge. Because he tells them, you're not getting anything. You're getting meager supplies. You're getting a pot, a machete, a flint, no food. The food's on the island. You will have to get it yourself. But with this challenge, only one person gets to have those supplies. The other two will have to find another way to get them, including the flint. So they have to grab 6 paddles of their color, get onto their barge, unclip both sides of their boat, get around the buoy, come back, grab the flint. Winner gets those supplies. I think, honestly, I love that as a challenge to start out. It's that old school marooning, but with higher stakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I had to laugh when I'm still learning the tribe names. I think it's is it Luvu?
Yeah, the blue tribe. Yeah, Luvu.
I thought it was hilarious that they and admirable that they made it as far as they did when they were still actually connected to their anchor.
Right. Like it demonstration to the strength of some of their tribe members. Like they're not slouches. I think that tribe is, while maybe dysfunctional, I definitely believe they're going to be dysfunctional, but they're strong. And you see them. I almost felt like it was like watching All-Stars, watching some of your rafts like sink in the water. I thought they were about to sink from being anchored still. But the Ua tribe, the Green tribe, they were a powerhouse in this. They got out, they unclipped, they massacred that challenge. While you still have the Yase tribe, the Yellow tribe, losing one of their paddles and cannot find it, even though it's staring right in front of them.
Right there. Oh, that had to hurt. That had to hurt.
Yeah, especially when you find it right at the challenge ends and you're just like...
That's so classic. Absolutely classic.
Yeah, so upon like initial outlook of these tribes, and we'll get into them getting onto their beaches, like what are you thinking about their dynamics?
I think that all of them have really have shown that they can all get along really well right off the bat. And there weren't too many people, because you know the first boot on just about every season, it's always somebody that doesn't fit in. It's always an odd person out kind of scenario. And I didn't feel that there were any standout oddballs. It's like everybody had at least one friend, if not two. All of the tribes seemed to have enough harmony that there was nobody biting someone else's head off. And that's pretty much the norm is, you know, day one, day two of Survivor, when people are just getting their sea legs, you always have, you know, some people that butt heads. And somehow all three of these tribes seem to find some sort of harmony. And I'll tell you, it might even be harder to make that work, although you might argue the opposite, but I feel like with a smaller tribe with just six, that it might even be harder to make that work because there's far fewer places to hide. There's only six of you.
Yeah.
And some would argue that with more people, it might be harder. Well, I don't know why, but I personally feel that with these tribes of six, and I know that when I played All-Stars, you know, it was three tribes of six as well. And you have the impression right away that nobody's safe. There's no place to hide. If you have to go to tribal council, it really could be just about anybody because it's much harder to build enough numbers to protect yourself. But I was really pleasantly surprised that all three of those tribes seem to have at least a reasonably healthy team dynamic. I mean, there were little splinterings here and there, but it was all super minor stuff. Nothing that looked to me like we were going to have a definite, you know, one tribe that's going to be just a shit show, you know?
Right. Like everyone was going in thinking the Yase tribe are going to be the shit show. They haven't won anything yet. We'll see what happens. Like, I really don't think any one of these tribes now, after seeing 2 hours of them, is really the odd team out that's just going to be like, okay, you're going to be decimated and join the other tribes at some point. But we're now going to go through the pre-immunity challenge phase. So we're going to go tribe by tribe just because I think that would be the cleaner way to do it, even though they kept going back and forth. We'll start with the tribe, the Ua tribe, because they didn't do the challenge to get their supplies. So I think it'll be a little bit cleaner that way. So Ua tribe, my initial reaction here is outside of maybe Jeannie, who I think is going to be more that like she's a social player and her empathy towards life, I think is going to draw people attention because her name was not mentioned at all, at least not on camera, which I found like surprising.
I don't know who she. I'm still learning names because I didn't really leading up to episode one. I didn't really bone up and study the players, you know, after they released the cast. So I don't even know who she is. So who remind me who Jeannie is?
Yeah, well, I can even do one better. I'll give you the story that she gave when you were on the beach. She was weaving palm fronds with Chantel, who's the pastor. And Jeannie was talking about how her She's been married. She's a lesbian for over 20 years. And right. yeah, and she was the one who she when she came out to her mom about it, she was expecting because she lives in a very traditional family that that she would be like pretty much like kicked out of the family. But instead, her mom gives her a diamond and it's like without saying it, says it. And I thought that actually like choked me up a little bit, like hearing these stories. So I was just like,
and you could tell when they showed her family. I mean, she's obviously somebody, you know, Asian American, big family, and you know, and that tradition is pretty strong, and those families tend to be pretty conservative. But it was totally heartwarming for me to hear that her mother saw her no differently and had all the love still, regardless of the fact that, you know, she dropped, you know, what for her mom might have been, you know, a bit of a bomb on her. But yeah, no, totally. Yeah, so she's already shown that she could have a really strong social game.
Yeah, I would have to believe so based off just how the dynamic of the vote went out for them. But we also get some other touching stories. We have Sarah who's like talking about she's playing for her grandmother who passed away in this past year due to COVID. Her grandmother was a bigger fan of the show than even Sarah was, so she feels like she's playing out there for her. Yeah, the beginning of like cancer stories with Brad talking about his dad who passed away of cancer, so he sort of inherited the cattle ranch from his father, has been his fourth generation. You have JD who was bullied growing up, so he's trying to break out of the mold that people try to put him in. Then you have Ricard who is a gay man married to, I believe he said, I want to make sure I have this right, transgendered man who's right. pregnant, and they have, I believe, an adopted daughter who's only less than 2 years old. So I feel like a lot of these people, they have these backgrounds and they also have these good reasons to be on the show and wanting to win, not just Tussle Survivor, but the money at the end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of them, you know, when you just hear some of those stories that you just rattled off, these people have already played other versions of the game Survivor in their real lives. They've gone through incredible challenges, which, you know, that's the kind of thing that just tempers you and makes you stronger.
Absolutely.
I have to say on that tribe, I was always kind of initially attracted as a fan to was it Bob, the cattle farmer?
Yeah, the big guy.
I got, you know, part of me was also like, oh, this cattle farmer is like Little Tom, like Big Tom's cattle farmer, Little Tom. But no, I thought that he, I liked his kind of, and he was called out on it by, I think, Sarah, who went home, but he was called out on the fact that he kind of plays Survivor today. Like, I think she said, like people played Survivor back in 2000, yeah. which felt like a total, like maybe deliberate or maybe unintentional dig, even at me personally, because I was the guy in Africa that had that reputation of telling people when they were going to be voted out. Right. And that almost made me, I mean, I was scared for him at that point, but it made me like him like even more, you know,
right.
It's something about him just, you know, I related to that. And so I hope he goes long and deep in the game. I don't know. I wouldn't bet the house on him at this point, but I like the fact that he's just kind of a straight shooter. You can tell he's a guy that his handshake is probably his bond.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, I relate to a lot about what he is. So I hope he goes far.
Right. I like when I looked at him initially in the preseason, especially during this episode a little bit, I see the upside of a Big Tom or a Keith Nail, like that archetype for him. Like he's probably not going to win the game, but I just expect that he, despite him being that old school mentality of like being in your face and some of these people aren't going to like that, I feel like he just has that, gets into seventh place, sixth place, gets halfway for the merge type of thing. But we'll see. Yeah. But these guys are gamers.
Totally. As long as Bob can kind of rein himself in a little bit and know when to speak up and when to kind of hold something inside. I mean, that's I think especially in this, you know, in this world of new school Survivor, he's going to need to learn how to really pick and choose what he says to who.
Right.
And that's going to be a challenge for him.
it seems like that's going to be the challenge with this tribe in general, because you have someone like JD who's trying to build these relationships with everyone, but Ricard automatically is like sussing him out. It's like, this kid's trying too hard on day zero. I need to get him out. But really what Ricard's even blind to is Chantel, who I was a big fan of when I first saw her on preseason. I was like, I think she could be really good. She has this background where she can relate to pretty much anyone, and she's in every conversation. And you hear her say it pre-tribal, I may have been at the bottom because I fucked up the puzzle, but I'm in the top when it comes to being in the room for every conversation, and I'm in the middle in terms of being able to make deals and make the decision.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant way for, I mean, it's really shrewd and brilliant of her to approach the game that way and to make sure that she's in all the conversations and without making it seem like she's just intruding. So she's done a great job of that. And my impression of JD, just like yours, I mean, he went in so way too fast, way too strong, way too loud. I mean, he totally reminded me of, like, you know, a teenage boy on his first date, who's like immediately like he's thinking, oh, he's making all the moves. He's like, first base ain't enough for me. I want to go to second base. I'm going to go to third base right now. You know, I just, I'm so excited that I want all of it right now on this first date, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, I'm a big fan of a lot of these people. I'm a big fan of JD. I think he's entertainment, and I'm looking forward to this feud between him and Ricard. But that pretty much sums up the main stuff that we were seeing on the Ua tribe. So we'll go to now the Yase and the Luvu tribe and the challenge that they were given, a dilemma. And essentially what we see here is they have two choices. They could have the Savvy challenge or the Sweat challenge. In order to gain their flint and their supplies, if they don't do it within 4 hours, they lose it. If you were in that situation, what do you think you would have tried to get your tribe to pick?
So, I'm sorry, my dog is totally distracting me.
Yeah.
Give me the question again.
Yep. So we had the Savvy challenge where everyone's involved. You have 4 hours to make your guess. If you guess wrong, there's a punishment. If you are right,
So the triangles versus the water.
Yep.
So, I mean, I would have really pushed probably for the triangles myself. I kind of feel like no risk, no reward. You know that when they have something that looks really kind of basic but physical, that it's going to be just a ball breaker. But right. most important for me in that situation was my first thought, because they made it very clear that the two people that were going to be carrying water were going to be essentially sequestered from the tribe.
Yep.
People couldn't hang out together. And I'll tell you what, I would not want to be one of them two people, because you know that they're going to be talking about you. And inevitably they both tribes were talking about the two people carrying water. And one thing that I've learned just from playing the game is those first few hours on the beach are so, so critically important. That's when, you know, bonds that can potentially be unbreakable are made in the first few hours of the game. And if you don't have a place at the table, even if you're saving everyone else's bacon by humping this water, it doesn't matter, because And we'll talk about this more, because I've got a few notes about this, but we'll talk about how important this is. I would anybody could argue with me, but I would go to my grave arguing that the single most important skill or quality that a survivor can have is all about social connection, social game, connecting with humans, the human connection, the relationships. That is number one. It trumps everything else. It doesn't matter how athletic you are. It doesn't matter how fast you can do fire. The social aspect of this game is the most important. It's the glue that holds everything together. And at the end of the day, when people vote to either get rid of or to award somebody the win, those decisions are always emotional. And they're almost always based on who do I like and who do I not like. Who do I feel close to? Who do I not feel close to? And the risk that you're taking if you agree to be one of these two water carriers, is immeasurable. And there is no way in hell I would have done that. And I would have probably, you know, there was what was his name? Boche.
Yeah.
He knew he wanted to do the triangles, but he did not want to speak up. Now, if I had had a strong opinion about those triangles, I would have simply said what I just told you. I would have said, look, guys, we either all win or we all lose on this challenge, but we all get to do it. It won't be anybody's fault. It'll be all of our fault because we all get to look at the puzzle. And at the end of the day, does anybody here want to potentially be one of two people who's on the outside because they didn't get to connect?
Right.
And I would argue that that would be enough of an argument in favor of doing the triangle puzzle that everyone would have said, whoa, that's a great point. I don't want to be the one that gets talked behind my back while these other people are becoming friends.
Right.
You know, and I also want to be involved in whether or not we win or lose this thing. I don't want to leave my destiny in the hands of two people when it could be in the hands of all six of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You follow me?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm following you. It makes complete sense. And when you look at that and you look at, just like the decision making, obviously you had David trying to make that pitch, but I feel like he bit his tongue because he didn't want to say too much in terms of trying to twist them back over to it. Cause I think at that point he realized it actually at this point, they're all so gung ho on doing this. Me fighting more for this will make me stand out. Luckily for him, the Yahtzee tribe did not have that impact or fear because they ended up trusting Xander more, and probably without saying it, they trusted David more because they did it and they did the work. While the four were doing their thing, they ended up distrusting Abraham because he was immediately game bot instead of trying to build connections.
Yeah.
Him going to Evie and first thing that we see him say is, "Oh, so what type of game do you want and play?" I'm like, "That's not the first thing you ask, man."
No, and it's, you know, again, it's super shocking to me that nobody actually really considered doing the triangle puzzle. Like, I feel like Probst and the producers got into their heads by making the puzzle seem probably harder than it was.
Right.
And that was probably, you know, that's where Jeff and the producers, they are the 19th player in this game. Mm-hmm. And that is a situation where Jeff and the other producers, they were playing kind of hard when they wrote that clue about, you know, what these challenges are all about. They were manipulating, you know, they were deliberately manipulating these players and probably nudging them in the direction of the water challenge. Or maybe they wanted to see, do you guys have the balls to do this challenge that we tell you only get one answer, and if it's wrong, you're done.
Right.
But it was still shocking to me, and it exposed all of these players. They would love to think that they are students of the game. They've been watching it, you know, for 20 years. They've seen all 40 seasons. And so that's why they're in there going, you know, getting all game bot and saying, hey, what are you going to do? And they're playing hard. But this is the situation where they all expose themselves as still beginners because they haven't played Survivor yet. But you ask just about any Survivor out there that's played what choice they'd make between those two challenges. And I think most of them would say, yeah, I'd go for triangle because it would be stupid for me to risk my game, my social game, and also to trust two people with my whole destiny. It's like, that's just that right there is Survivor 101 to me. Mm-hmm. And all of these players who think that they're so smart and so experienced, they're babies, and they are going to be learning how to play the game Survivor the hard way, which is by playing it, which is, you know, how it should be. And so I applaud Jeff and team for putting a challenge together on day one of the game that exposed all of these players to be the greenhorns that they actually are.
Right. I agree. Like, for me personally, I would want to do triangles because, like, yes, it looks intimidating at first, but like, you have 4 hours, regardless of which task you do. You have 4 hours to do this, and you have six heads working together. You have a bunch of sand that you can write on and figure out it's this many. 4 hours is plenty of time to figure that out.
And if you lose, what do you lose? You lose your pot, your flint, your machete, wasn't that, you lose that for like a day or two, right?
Yeah, like they just don't get it. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, who cares? We've all, you know, many seasons of Survivor didn't have flint for several days before the game started. They don't have rice anyway, so what, you know, they don't really need the pot. They get drinking water now that's fit to drink, so they don't got to boil it. So what are you missing out on? Maybe you're not eating food for a couple days. I mean, that is no big deal in the big scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Like if your life in the game, if this was a challenge for immunity, well, then maybe I could see that they'd be extra scared about going with triangles. But the stakes were pretty low. Now, the stakes were pretty low in terms of what you would win or lose in this challenge. But the stakes were very high if you chose the wrong challenge. And I think they chose the wrong challenge, because if you choose the wrong challenge, the water challenge, you run the risk of being an outsider because you didn't get to connect to those people for 4 hours. Four of the most important hours in every hour of this 26-day game.
Absolutely. And we see that more, like, because we already sort of talked about the pre-stuff with the Yasi tribe. We'll talk about Luvu now. We see them automatically just pick it because they're like, we were too dumb to even take off the back part of the hook for the boat. Why are we going to try ourselves with mental? So the two, Deshaun and Danny decide, yeah, we're the two biggest guys. We'll do it. We'll pound it out. And while they're doing it, they're like, you know what? We think we can do this either way in 4 hours. While we're doing this, if we can find an idol, we can find an idol. There's a reason why they would put two people out there, which is a mistake to do it. And you see Nasir catch them in it. And Nasir immediately goes to rat them out.
Talk about a WTF moment. The fact that those guys just thought that it would be okay and safe when they haven't yet formed bonds or connections with people. They thought it would be okay to potentially jeopardize everybody's game by losing that challenge so they could find an idol for themselves. I mean, again, that's adding insult to injury. It's like they made one dumb decision already, and now they've made an even dumber decision.
I can't argue with that. But we see afterwards, after they finish it, they do, both teams complete it. But on the Luvu side, immediately after they get back to camp, Sydney pulls Deshaun aside and says, hey, Nasir was trying to tell us that you were looking for an idol, man. He's trying to put a target on both you and Danny's back. So we already know what the story is going to be for Luvu once they lose. It's going to be Danny and Deshaun versus Nasir. And it sounds like, even though Nasir was honest to the rest of the group, I don't think that they liked that he still went ahead and did strategy, even though they agreed to not do strategy.
Yeah, and he was kind of pulling the same moves as JD. He was just playing too hard, too fast, and being too obvious about it, you know, showing his hand of cards. And that may be, you know, a function of the fact that he, like, as he said, Survivor has had a huge, huge impact on his life. And you often see the people that often play too hard, too fast often are super fans, because they really feel like, you know, I'm going to get out there and I'm not going to let, no one else is going to play my game. I'm going to play my game. And I know I've learned so much and I'm such a scholar of the game that, that I can go out there and I can play hard and I'm going to pull it off, but it's hard to do. And it's much harder to play that hard in new school than it was in old school. Because I mean, I know I played my game, the game I played in Africa never would fly now. I played so hard. I refused to let anybody have the driver's wheel. That was just my thing. I wanted to make all the moves. I wanted to make the decisions. I wanted to be in charge. That wouldn't fly these days. But these guys are, you know, these guys know better. But they can't help themselves.
Yeah, they can't help themselves. And as fans, we're all for it, because we're going to get more drama, more understanding of what's happening as to why they're gunning after each other, which sometimes, like in more recent seasons, it's sort of been random for the viewer to understand why someone's going after someone. It would just be some random like 3-second clip. We're getting true reasons right off the gap of why certain people are going to want to target the other. And So we complete all that challenge. We're about to do the summit. But before we do that, let's hear a word from some of our sponsors.
Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck.
Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients. Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine in cherry ice flavor. Each and every flavor actually tastes great, and it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym.
I am so happy that Lucy is sponsoring us. Ever since they came on board, I have gotten no less than 5 of my friends transitioned over to Lucy and put their cigarettes down. They like the gum. I'm used to seeing the packages all around. This stuff is great, and it's really helping people make much healthier choices. So get on board and join the Lucy movement.
Hey, it's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple that you don't even have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down.
Reality NSFW listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code SURVIVOR to get 20% off all products, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. That's lucy.co and be sure to use that promo code SURVIVOR.
This episode of Reality NSFW is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us, Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer lasting erections. That's right, we're giving away super hard dicks.
Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED.
Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor offices, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, it's all done online.
BlueChew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problem here. BlueChew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy.
Hey, if you're looking to give that immunity idol to someone or you don't want to be voted out of a crater, don't worry. Blue Chew's got you covered. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information.
And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's Blue Chew, BlueChew.com, promo code SURVIVOR to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
And we're back. And it's now day 2 on the beaches of Fiji. And we are with the Luvu tribe. They're having fun. They're grabbing some crabs. And then suddenly a boat comes in with a note. You never like seeing a boat with a note.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So they're told that one person from their tribe has to get on this boat. They're going to be taken to a separate island where they will have to make a decision before coming back to the tribe. And we see some different ways people end up making a decision. The first two tribes with Luvu and Yase, they sort of just handpick the person. Luvu, Danny just volunteers because he's just like, I'm here to play Survivor. I'm going on this boat and figuring it out.
You know what? my hat is off to Danny on that move. I mean, it took stones to say that and to do that, because I mean, it is potentially super risky. Again, it's really early in the game. But mm-hmm. I have to say, I tip my hat to him, because I know that that was a tough decision, but it was one of those situations almost where, you know, you're all standing in a line, you know, in a parallel line, and someone says, I'd like to have, could one of you step forward and volunteer for this mission? And everyone steps back, and Danny's like, well, I guess that must mean I'm going, you know, but he didn't make a fuss about it. He just said, fine, y'all don't want to do it, I'll do it. And I applaud him for that.
Well, I feel like with the first two people, I feel even though they were two of the people who did the challenge to get them the supplies, I feel they must have had conversations from that point on to the next day where they felt comfortable enough taking that risk of going out there from the rest of their tribe mates. So like with Danny, maybe he had more people come up to him as well about the Nasir thing. And it makes it sound like I'm in a good spot. It's Nasir who's in trouble. Even though you can't believe everything, you can only believe so much. And I know with Danny, he was there to play. He said in his bio that he wanted to find an idol or an advantage like from the get-go. So he probably thought, oh, there's probably an idol there at the end of the road, so I'm going to do that. Xander takes the risk. And what I thought was very just like, I don't know if it's foretelling or anything, but the Ua tribe drew rocks.
Brilliant. I thought that was super brilliant, because it meant that nobody had to, because again, it's like so early in the game that, you know, smart players that haven't gotten to know everybody yet, you don't want to show all your cards yet. And it's in these pressure pot situations where you have to make a quick decision that could impact everyone's game. Mm-hmm. That's where people, unfortunately for a lot of their games, that's where they expose their weaknesses or elements of their personality, whether it be, oh, that person's bossy, or that person's a control freak, or that person's a chicken shit. You know, those situations like that are the ones that expose everyone's true colors, right? And they managed to find a way that nobody had to end up being caught with their pants down. They said, let's just do rocks. We all, you know, it's a slower way to kind of enter into the game, because they managed to deflect that pressure pot situation, and it worked, I mean, brilliantly well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So JD benefits from it. He grabs the white rock. He's excited about it. So him, Xander, and Danny meet at the Separate Island for their summit, where they hike up the mountain, which I did a hike for the first time a couple months ago in Seattle in the Olympics. I had to take so many breaks going up that hill. It was a 2.5 mile, almost like directly uphill into heaven. I understand Xander's pain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're, you know, again, you know, Jeff and crew, they're making it clear that nothing's free on Survivor. Right. You got to, you know, and as it turns out, there was nothing really at the top of that mountain except for a note that told them to go back down.
Yeah.
You know, so they basically just got hosed into walking up a mountain. They really didn't need to walk all the way up.
Right. And I know somewhere at a premiere party in New York, your boy Ethan was probably like, that's nothing. I had to do it 40 times.
With logs. Yeah. With logs. I guarantee you, Ethan, as we speak right now, he's probably telling somebody the equivalent of the, you know, I had to hike to school in the snow with bare feet while, you know, carrying, you know, 100 pounds of bricks. It's going to be that scene for sure. But I mean, you have to admit, I mean, Ethan looked like it hurt him a lot more than it hurt these guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what I think was really cool about having it this early, like we've seen summits happen later, but having this moment where you get to talk cross tribe where you don't have all those connections yet, I think it's huge for these three individuals. If they're able to make a swap or make the merge and they're all there, they already have that connection from what was probably a several hour hike up and down that mountain.
That was the single biggest win that resulted from this little episode, or this little activity in this episode of the game. These three, they probably didn't know it going into it, but coming out of it, if they're smart, they'll know that the biggest thing that they got from this, even more than maybe that one extra vote that that Xander got, is the fact that the three of them were able to connect three people from three completely different tribes where no one else has had that opportunity. That could be huge game advantage down the road.
Right. So we get to that next part then. They get to the top and they're told, from here on, you go in your separate ways. You have a decision to make. And it's ultimately, as Xander phrases it, and I think it's the correct way to phrase it, it's a game of chicken. So there's a wheel there, and you can either turn it to protect your vote or turn it to risk your vote. If everyone picks risk your vote, you all lose your vote. If you all pick protect, nothing happens. Game stays as usual. But if you have an if one person picks protect or two people pick protect and the other pick risk, the people who get risk get that extra vote at their first tribal. And we see Xander and JD risk it. And Danny was, I think for him, it was a smart play for him to protect his vote. I think JD was always going to risk it. Xander, I was on the fence on whether or not he would do it, just because he didn't seem at first like he would be someone who would risk it. But I'm glad that he did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could tell you, I would have probably played that particular part of the game safe.
Mm-hmm.
Given that it was, you know, literally day two or something.
Yeah, it was day two.
Day one or day two. I would have protected the vote because I, especially knowing that I didn't have a lot of time to concoct some kind of a fictional story about what happened on that island. You know, those people, everyone that was left behind, they were going to sniff out a fictitious story. It doesn't matter how good a liar you are. I don't think anyone in that short amount of time with so many suspicious people waiting on the beach could have come up with, you know, a credible fictitious story. And so I would have known that, you know, just the protect the vote probably would have been the safest way for me to be able to go back, tell the truth, and make it clear that I wanted to do the least amount of harm to my tribe that I could.
Right. Yeah. And so we see that's Danny's approach, and that's how he explains it to his tribe. And you see the cutaways to his tribe, and they're all like, it was too specific for it to be a lie. So I feel like I need to be trusting him here. You have Xander, yep, who basically says, I did risk it. I feel like someone else is going to protect it, but I'm doing it for us. We will have an extra vote. So I feel like he pitched it the right way, because they all were already saying he's the one that each of the rest of us trusts the most to not lie. So even him being forthcoming, he can still be deceitful, but still be like, it's for us, but know in his back of his mind, it's like, this is for me.
Yeah.
Then you have JD, who does the story, lies and says he protected his vote because it's too early. There's too few people making connections with. It doesn't make sense. And Ricard, maybe it's because he's sussing him out, or maybe it's just because he just didn't have a vibe with him already, goes into his confessional, goes, this kid's full of shit.
Well, and I feel that that JD shit the bed in that when he tried to tell the story, it was probably because he was nervous. It was a poker tell, because he was lying and he's probably not the best liar. But when he told the story, it was actually really difficult to follow. Like, I was listening to him tell the story about, you know, and he didn't really tell it in a proper kind of chronological order. He focused on like weird details and kind of omitted others. And it felt like he was almost confused himself about what had happened. But it definitely, if I'd been one of those people that had not been out on the boat and on that, you know, on that summit, I would have been like, okay, what did JD just say? I don't really understand what happened. And, so he may have, you know, 95% of what he said may have been the truth, but it still all sounded like horseshit to me because I didn't follow the story.
Right. And I would say maybe it's an age thing, but him and Xander are the same age, and Xander was able to get that story, say it, and unfortunately, JD was in a spot where if he admitted he risked it, it would have made him even more of a target. So he was sort of in a damned if you will, damned if you won't situation.
Well, but he could have basically just said exactly the same thing, you know, in his own way that Xander said.
Right.
You know,
right.
I risked the vote for all of us. But he chose not to go that route. And I think that nipped him in the bud because he's just not a very good liar.
Not yet, at least. Maybe it's something he'll learn in these 26 days. Yep. But we're now heading into our first immunity challenge of the season. And it has all of the things that Johnny loves, going over stuff, going under stuff, carrying stuff, and then doing a puzzle at the end. I enjoy
Johnny must love a lot. Johnny must love a lot of challenges on Survivor then, because isn't that like almost every single challenge?
At least on the US, he loves his Australian Survivor challenges. Which, by the way, people, if you want more Survivor content, Paramount Plus dropped seasons 4 through 6 of Australian Survivor for the US consumer.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, if you guys haven't seen it and you got Paramount Plus, you've got to tuck in and check that out, because I honestly prefer most of that to, I mean, our own American flavor. They do it really right.
They do it really right. Sometimes their twists get me scared, but we're going to stick to here. So it was a big challenge, having to go over the cargo net, going underneath like the wood chips and the panels. Then you had to carry all the sandbags off and had to be on that specific platform. If it fell, you could not move your cart forward. And we saw Luvu try to just chuck one of the sandbags on it. It fell off. So they had to do that thing twice. And I'm sure that cart was heavy. So they were probably not thrilled about whoever it was that dropped it. But you go into this and you think, oh, yeah, Luvu has no chance now. Or, like, they'll get there, but they won't finish the puzzle. You think, oh, this is it was game to lose.
And that just led you right into, you know, what you know is one of Jeff Probst's most favorite, you know, situations on Survivor. It's when the underdog, the tribe that looks like the tribe or the player that looks like they have no chance, when they continue and they keep pushing, they persevere, and then they get the win. You know, Jeff loves that more than just about anything else. And I mean, there's a great, you know, it's a very Survivor moment when that happens, because, you know, the message there is clear: is you never give up, and you're never, nobody is ever out of it until they are completely out of it.
Right. And you see, this is why it's like, it's just like in sports or any competition that you do, you play it out, you put your full heart into it, and you always have a shot. And Luvu gets that shot. Big reason why they get that shot, though, is Uwa's taking a commanding lead out of that puzzle when suddenly they hit a roadblock and Sarah realizes we're missing pieces and there were still pieces in the bags. And I feel like that, once again, it's showing the greenness of these players who think that they're going to know everything going in. You always have to make sure with these puzzles, you empty those bags. You pat your hands on them. Make sure there's nothing left in there.
And it's easy for us to say that, but again, it's a function not only of their kind of greenness, but also that this is how their minds are. They're thinking, oh my God, this is my very first immunity challenge. Oh my God, I'm on Survivor. Oh my God, this is my first immunity challenge. So they are naturally, a lot of them are naturally spastic, and they have not yet learned the difficult chore of when you get to a challenge, you just shake all that fan shit out of your head, just shake it out, put your head in game mode. That's the only thing you should be focused on, is as soon as Jeff, you know, says, come in guys, or, you know, come on in now.
Come on in.
As soon as you walk in, and this is how we used to approach it back, you know, like season 3 when I was on, we had not yet gotten to the point where we were fanboy or fangirling out on anything, because most of us weren't fans.
Right.
We were there to play. But, you know, I remember vividly, it's like when Jeff, he'd have us hidden, each of the tribes couldn't see each other. We'd be hidden out of view. And then he would, you know, say, come on in, guys. And we would come in from, and we didn't get to see, you know, anything of what the challenge was going to be about. So we didn't know, is this going to be obstacles? Is this going to be endurance? Is it going to be whatever it could be? We had no idea, right? But as soon as you came around that bend and you caught line of sight on what the challenge was, all of us, we were all doing the same thing. Everybody was either quiet and totally just recording with our eyes and our brains everything that we could see in front of us and starting to figure out, okay, what am I going to do there? How do I, you know, get through this as quickly or as well as I can? Or people were, you know, people were pairing up and talking to each other and saying, yeah, hey, what do you think? What do we do there? That is how you approach a challenge. You're not thinking about, oh, I'm on Survivor, I'm on TV, or oh my God, there's Jeff, there's our host. No, you're not looking at Jeff. You're looking at the obstacles. You're looking at, okay, what do I need to do to get under that, over that? How does that cart look? What do I need to do to get up that? You know, you're thinking about you're analyzing and you're picking that shit apart. And your brain is a computer whose sole purpose is to figure out how to win that challenge. Everything else at that point melts away. Even, you know, most of us during the challenges, it was like, didn't matter who you liked, who you didn't like, who you were playing with or who you were playing against. It was like, if we are on tribe together, we are now a unit and nothing else matters. Right now, it's just this challenge. The next 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, that's the whole world. Everything else has been put on pause, right? Absolutely. And you could tell that in that situation, you know, the fact that that they misplaced or forgot to take a piece out, they were spastic and they were distracted and they were not thinking, you know, meticulously about everything they had to do to get that, you know, to get that win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt for Sarah there because it did really look like if they didn't lose those puzzle pieces, they were just going to win outright. But because
I think they would have. I think it's a foregone conclusion that they would have won that challenge.
Yeah, and like to be clear to the people who listen to this, I've never played Survivor, as you can tell. I know people can be confused by the buff I'm wearing, but no, I have not played. So I can't speak on shit on how these players actually felt on the island. I would like to think I'm good, but it's like what we've been talking about. I could go up there and have those same exact mistakes that we're seeing these people play for the first time making. But Luvu stays strong. They stay composed. They win. They complete that puzzle. Luvu's safe. And the other two tribes have to go to tribal council. And that's just craziness. And it looks like we have a little guest here. Oh! It's Johnny Fairplay, everybody. He made it.
Johnny, are you hammered?
I think
Johnny's hammered.
The crowd was so awesome. Like, everyone here has sex with other people willingly. It was one of the best Survivor viewing parties you've ever been to. Unlike most Survivor viewing parties, and I'll be honest. What's up, guys? Did you love the premiere or what?
Yeah, we loved the premiere, Johnny. It was a great time where we just finished talking about the immunity challenge. What were your thoughts?
I don't think he hears us.
I don't think he hears us too.
Was Jeff Rose cool yet? Like, did Jeff Rose start watching Jungle Packing and learn how to be cool yet?
I think he's trying. Hey, you got a problem with that? Yeah, I do think Jeff Rose is trying to up his game right now. Johnny, we are having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, Johnny, you're...
Oh, we have co-host Lauren Pratt there, too.
Hello. Hey, Johnny, your audio is dog shit, Johnny. Your audio is total dog shit. We can't hear you.
Yeah, we're gonna remove you from that. We'll hear from you soon. We're gonna
The tribe has spoken.
Love you too, Johnny.
Hold down the fort.
We are. Okay.
Hey, you know, we just snuffed his torch.
Yeah, I just snuffed his torch. But yeah, so we just finished the immunity challenge. We are on our way figuring out how these tribes are going to go going to the tribal council. We are starting with the Yasi tribe. And who I should give a lot of credit for are Evie and Liana really took control of this tribe and dictated how the vote was going to go.
Yep. No, I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah, it was fun watching them like be able to work both David and Xander into working in that way to get Eric out. Eric seems just like someone who is, I guess, was being too game bot-ish, maybe even for the guys. And he had that like middle schoolish, new schoolish approach of, oh, we got to keep the tribe strong. We got to keep the tribe strong. Get out,
you're
Tiffany.
Talking about Abraham,
she jumps.
Right?
Hmm? Yeah,
you're
Abraham.
Talking about Abraham. Yeah,
yes,
Abraham.
Yes, Abraham. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and honestly, I think Evie made a power play. She was like, I think Tiffany's going to be a number for me, and maybe for Liana as well. We get out Abraham, like, we have the numbers. The women won't be the first people voted out of this tribe, which you see so often in Survivor. Well, so I love that.
I loved that for once in an early episode, especially the first, like, usually it's the first two or three episodes, the women are always at a massive disadvantage because the dudes, especially the bro dudes, are always pulling out the strength card, always pulling out the, this is right for the tribe card because we need strength. And it is so, so categorically unfair for the female players. It's just, it's baloney. And I've never been one that really believed that, that you could make that kind of a major decision based on just that one factor. It's not just about brawn. It never was, and it shouldn't be. But I think the thing that I think even more than a couple of players kind of astutely, you know, carrying or helping to drive the tribe decision on this, I think that even more than that, the fact that Abraham went was, again, like evidence, and I hold this out as like exhibit A of what I said earlier, that human connection and social game is always the number one survivor skill or quality that you can bring to the game. And yep. Abraham pretty much at tribal council made it very clear that he had none of that. His only go-to was, you know, strength. I got strength. And but it was Tiffany who was kind of on the chopping block, right?
Yep.
So Tiffany, I mean, she didn't have to say much, but what she said totally resonated. It resonated with me, and I think it resonated with the rest of the tribe. And that is, she, you know, she'd gotten to know her tribe mates, and you know, they knew that she had, you know, love and affection for them. And, you know, remember, these people are all, they have no family, they've got no spouses, they've got no friends, they've got each other, and that's it. These people, even only after a day or two, they're already lonely. And if you can make a true human connection with these people, it's going to be really hard for everyone to write your name down. I don't think anyone could really imagine voting Tiffany out at that point, because they had probably already shared intimate stories with her, and they felt...
Yeah,
they felt that hug, you know, that constant kind of feeling of being hugged. And that is, it trumps everything else in Survivor. And that's where Abraham, like when they were going through all that, I thought to myself that Tiffany looks like she's going, but I have a feeling it's got to be Abraham, because he's just this robot. Nobody really, nobody cares about him. They only care about his muscles. And right now, heart beats muscle.
And you know what? If it was truly muscle, why wasn't he one of the two people doing the water challenge? If they wanted to do the sweat, like we just proved that the other two guys could do take a lot of physical toll. But like you heard it from that one little snippet of conversation where it got Evie turned off from Eric Abraham. Abraham said he was here, like, keep the tribe strong. We had to keep strength. And Evie said her game was, I want to build personal relationships with people and just try to be as genuine as possible.
She knows for sure. And the other thing you got to think about is, you know, you got three tribes of six. Somebody gets voted out, there's five. You know that the way they're, you know, the way that they've always done it, and they're probably going to do it here, is when there's a challenge, you know, someone's got to sit out. There will be some form of equalization. Yep. If you get out your muscle, it doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, just chronically weaker than everyone else. But no, her point, totally well taken. She knows. So that shows a lot of maturity in her game on day three.
Yep. And so we basically described what happened at Tribal. Abraham goes out in a 5-1 vote. He is the first boot of Survivor 41, or drop the four, keep the one. He is the first boot of the new era of Survivor. He is our new Sonia Christopher.
and he didn't even get a goodbye. He didn't even get to say goodbye. They didn't even play his goodbye, did they?
They did very briefly, but it was such a quick transition that it went from them leaving. He had a quick snippet, and then immediately you already saw the Ua tribe at Tribal, which was crazy.
It was so brief that I completely missed it.
It was like he basically said what he was saying as he was leaving. It was like, I was completely blindsided. I did not expect this at all, which again goes to your point of he was blindsided because I believe he didn't make enough of that personal connection to have a read of the room. Everyone else had a read of the room.
And when people get blindsided, by definition, that means that there is a majority of people talking and planning and scheming, and you're not included, and it's about you. So that means that's right there. That's the dictionary definition of like social game or no social game. And he had no social game because he did not know. He had no clue. I mean, they completely flim-flammed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that wraps up the Yase tribe. So we're going to talk about the Ua tribe now. They get back. Sarah's so upset. She's apologizing for what happened with the puzzle. And she was like, I'm kicking myself. I told myself I would not put myself in this position to be at the puzzle because the people who do the puzzles go home. But she's getting reassurance at this moment from Ricard, mainly a little bit Chantel. But Chantel's playing the room and they're like, no. We're still going to go for JD. He is shady. His stories don't make sense. We're going to go for him. They try to get Brad on board, and Brad decides to go with his old school mentality. He goes, I don't want to get rid of JD yet. He's strong. I think it should be Chantel or Sarah. And Sarah's just like, I'm right here. What are you doing?
That was delicious. Like I said earlier, it was hilarious, especially when Sarah mentioned that, you know, who's this guy? He's playing like he's playing Survivor in the year 2000. I thought that was just hilarious.
It's funny too, because I found out from his like interviews, he didn't start watching Survivor till very recently. And I believe he started in like Nicaragua and South Pacific. Like, he didn't start watching and starting at Borneo and Africa and Australian outlet, but he still just like has that old school mentality.
He's a farmer. I mean, he's a farmer, and it's you know, and he exists in a world where old school values are the rule, right? It's like you make a handshake agreement, you know, that your word is your bond, and you know, it's, you know, there's value in enormous values placed on loyalty and honesty and being forthright, you know, and being a straight shooter and speaking your mind. These are all just old school, old world, traits that a lot of people have chosen to kind of shed in the new world.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm not surprised that he brings all of those kinds of old school traits, because it's not necessarily just about Survivor. That's just old school.
Yeah.
You know, without even the Survivor in it.
Right. Absolutely. And so like we really see as they're heading to Tribal, it sounds like it's either going to be Sarah or JD. JD is disappointed by that because he tried to build a bond with her to be like, hey, the young people always get screwed at the beginning. Let's try to deflect that and work together. But he's like, it's either you or me now. So I'd rather it be you than me. I'm sorry, Sarah, but we head into tribal. And this is the more modern age. Something I'm not a big fan of with the game. Is super the standing not a fan up. Of this. The standing up, the whispering.
The whispering. It becomes, I mean, some people love it because it's just this.
It's live.
It's dramatic and it's live. But it is also complete anarchy. And I found myself just trying to follow what was happening. And maybe this is kind of, some people really like this aspect of it. But for me, what I hated about it is I really, really had absolutely zero idea what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that I would never really be privy to what was said, that they didn't let us hear. And like, I want to know how the machine works. I want to know if, let's say, you know, in this case, it's, well, spoiler alert, we've all watched it though. It's Sarah that goes. I want to know, like, what was the old game of Mousetrap, you know, the ball hits the lever that makes the thing. I love to know, like, what was the sequence of events that led to Sarah going, right?
Right.
Or whoever it might be. And I felt while I was watching this, like, total chaos and anarchy, I was like, I'm not following any of this. I don't know what's going to happen. And there was, you know, I've said this before on y'all's podcast, but, you know, it used to be, you know, back in the old school, tribal council was like church.
Yeah.
Like, it, Jeff and the producers and the handlers made it very clear. They'd say, okay, here's how it's going to go. And we would all be there. We'd be, you know, lined up and on our best behavior. And they'd say, okay, we are going to line you up in a specific order. There are stumps over there. You will sit in the stump in the order in which you're lined up. You are not to, and once you sit, your butt cannot come off that stump until it's time to vote. Mm-hmm. You will not speak unless you are spoken to, and you will not speak to each other. And that was like hard rules. Like, people seem to think nowadays, God, those old schoolers, they didn't have the guts to, you know, to stand up and walk over and whisper. And, you know, the only thing that was allowed were like genuine outbursts. You know, if you were in tribal council and you're like, hey, well, wait a second, fuck you. No, I didn't say that. Now, that's totally fair game, right? Because, you know, if you need to defend yourself or if someone's talking shit about you, I mean, that's another thing. But it was pretty clear that when you got to tribal council, strategic decisions on voting had been made. And if anything was going to change at tribal, it was going to be because of Jeff's interrogation of us. And whatever he managed as like an attorney / judge at tribal council, whatever he could pull out of us, and that's why you had to be really guarded at tribal council and careful about what you said, but whatever Jeff could pull out of you, if that was the only stuff, and whatever kind of outbursts might happen as a result of what Jeff would ask us, that might change collectively the tribe's mind. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what was really exciting, is that, God, is something like that going to happen? But short of that, we all went in there with, you know, our minds made up. And then it was like, okay, are things going to change?
Right.
I mean, it's totally different now. And I had such a hard time following what the hell is going on at tribal tonight.
Yeah. Like, luckily I'm able to keep up with all the captions and everything. And I thought, like, for what it's worth, I like that the one piece of information they withhold from captions was Chantel, like, giving the name to JD at the end. Yeah. And JD goes, so what do you want me to do? I will do whatever you want, Sarah or Brad. As long as it's not me, I'll do either of them. And then you see her whisper. You do not know what you're saying. At first, I feel they were making it come across as us, like, wanting to truly believe she said Brad. And that was going to be four votes on Brad. Brad was going home. There was, like, just a random shot in the dark where, like, Ricard's trying to keep everyone happy. So he's like, okay, let's just take out Brad. No one's saying Brad's name. Let's just do Brad.
I mean, Shan must have said Sarah, right?
I think she said Sarah to Ricard and then went over to JD. Said Ricard said Brad, but we're still going to do Sarah. I got them. You're good with me. Because, like, Chantel's trying to make sure she has all of her bridges. And really, she leaves this tribal council being Ricard's number one, being JD's number one, and she's like has a good relationship going so far with Jeannie and Brad. So if they go to tribal again, I don't think it's Chantel that's getting looked at. I think it's going to be either Ricard and JD. That's just like how that war's going to go. But I feel JD played it the best he could. He was in a spot where he realized he had the battle. And I think Chantel played it smart by reassuring Sarah, like, hey, don't worry. I told JD you're good. You don't have to play that die.
Right, right.
Which I think that's the bigger part of the game. Her and Vochi, I think, are understanding the die, the shot in the dark already and saying, like, at first you look at it and you're terrified, but in full honesty, I feel there's a way as players that you could tell people, like, there's no point in using it. Like, someone's going to use it, but I would be like, your vote is more important than your safety at this point.
And I think that shot in the dark is, it's going to be kind of the litmus test of all the players' mettle, of, like, you know, their skill and their wisdom in the game. Because I mean, I really think that the shot in the dark option to me is it's a pretty insidious and shrewd gimmick that was put out there by Jeff and the producers and the game makers. But it is such an evil tool, and you know, the true hardcore survivor player is never going to turn to the shot in the dark unless they are literally 150% sure that they don't have a chance in hell, you know. And I wrote some notes about this, but the thing about the shot in the dark, it adds this element of chaos to the game, simply because it's a mind fucker, right? Everyone is thinking about that shot in the dark as a potential, like, Hail Mary. And I think Probst might have even called it a Hail Mary. I don't know if he did or not, or if that was in my mind. But here's the thing. We have seen so many tribal councils when players who seem to be 100% going home. I mean, in the 40 seasons, how many players were 100% going home and then they survived against all odds, right? That happens so many times, right? When you're like, that person's going home. There is no way. I mean, the underdog out of nowhere story has happened so many times. Now, how many of those players would have gone home if they had instead chosen the shot in the dark? I'd say most of them.
Yeah.
Most of those, because it would have been a 16.7% chance of getting something good. Now, if all of those players that were convinced that they were going home but didn't go home had chosen shot in the dark, most of them would have gone home.
Right, because at the end of the day, with these small, especially with these smaller tribes, your vote matters. Like, maybe you're in a merge situation and maybe it's lopsided. Maybe that's like an opportunity to use it instead of, like, I feel like this must be their attempt at it's a worse chance version of the 50-50 coin. And I think they're probably making it tougher to find hidden immunity idols. So they're like, okay, we're going to make it so hard for them that we have this as like a, oh, this will be our good TV moment. Instead of the idol, they'll have a chance to, like, do it. And like, oh, look, I'm safe.
But the math is just so wonky. It's like, you know, do you want to trust your entire fate in this game to something that is that essentially means that you have an 83% chance of losing?
Right.
Like, who would take those odds? You know, if it was like you get to choose, you know, you get to pick a pill out of a box. Five of them kill you. One of them makes you super strong.
What's the payoff here? And it's like, you also have to look at, like, what's the payoff? Because, like, yes, you survived this time. And, like, if that's your only option and you have nothing else, like, you're just gone next round. Like, that you've only, like, prevented the inevitable. Instead, like, you would have to do a lot of work in those next couple of days, like, reverse it so you're not the one in target. But ultimately, we'll see how it plays out. You know it's going to get used and be successful at some point, but I just hope it doesn't have a big impact.
I really hope that it gets never used and they just sunset it and say, we're never bringing Shot in the Dark back. Because if no one ever uses it, I can guarantee you they're not bringing it back next season.
Right.
Like, so I want no one to use it. I agree.
I want no one to use it. If I was out there, I would want that die. And when it comes time to like potentially use it, I would just throw it into the fire. I'm just like, this means nothing to me. This is how confident I am. And if I lose, I lose.
How much of a baller move would have been for one of them before they even went to vote to just drop their die in the fire and say, you know what? I ain't never using that. I'll be here for 26 days, people, but I ain't rolling that dice. Right? I ain't playing that dice.
Like
That would have been a baller move.
Yeah, like essentially you are rolling the dice by eliminating the dice from the table. You're just like,
yep.
I don't have it. I will do what I need to do to get there. Because I feel like it's less satisfying for me. Like, it's one thing with idols because that's just such a new, like, it's not a new thing anymore. It's there. But, like, they use these random twists to move forward in the game. I just wouldn't feel right about it.
It would have been just so delicious to see Jeff's face, though, if one of them took one of those fancy
little
guy and just dropped it in the fire and said, yeah, Jeff, I'm taking a pass on that. I don't need your special help. No help required. I'll get there on my own steam. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. But yeah, so ultimately they vote and we see Sarah, unfortunately, is the second boot of the season in a 4-1-1 vote. Four votes on her, one on Brad, one on Ricard. And it looks like we're going to see more chaos next episode. And I'm here for it. I loved this episode. I felt bad for at least one of the boots who went out. The other one sort of deserved going out where they did, but yeah, I'm loving this cast.
You were sad that Sarah went and happy that Abraham went. Is that
I would say overall, the rest of the Yellow Tribe, I feel like is going to bring more to the table than Abraham. Like, I read his stuff. He was like, the people he was trying to play like, I was like, they're tired approaches. I don't need to see those approaches anymore. Yeah.
I was not a fan of Abraham's from the get-go. He's probably a fantastic.
Oh yeah, you know, off show, I think he's fantastic.
In real life, he's probably a fantastic person, but I didn't really want to see him on the show. Sarah, I was sad to see Sarah go. I thought she seemed to be somebody that brought a lot of heart to the game. So, but I also felt like she might have been a little too maybe fragile or soft or maybe feeling. Mm-hmm. It might have been a hard game for her because I think she's a very emotional person and, you know, has a lot of heart. But I was sad to see her go. But right. I thought this was a really strong first episode. I went in with a completely, I didn't go in thinking like a lot of people that I'm going to love it no matter what, because I have such a rabid appetite for Survivor because I've gone without for so long. I wasn't really feeling that at all. I went in it with an open mind thinking, okay, let's see what you got. And I thought it was a great first episode. I think it's going to be an exciting season. I think primarily because I think the cast is brilliant. I think we have a really great cast of people. I hate all the new gimmicks, but you know, naturally anybody that knows me could have, you know, you could have called that. I don't like a lot of the gimmicks, but I think that I do like how fast and frantic this game feels. I felt that they did a really great job of making 2 hours fly by like it was 20 minutes. And I'm stoked. I'm pumped for this season. I'll be watching it from start to finish.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Lex.
I got one question for though, before we let it go. I got one question for you. You probably have done a lot more studying on this than I have, but let's just say, not based on all the studying you've done, but just based on tonight's episode, if you had to pick one person that you think is either going to win or go really, really far, who is your one player? I've got mine in my mind, but I'm going to ask you, who is the mm-hmm. one horse that you're betting on right now?
See, I'm stuck between two people. I've been stuck on them.
You
got
to pick one.
I'm going to stick to what I've done in like drafts and everything. And it was based off initial impression when I saw them. I'm going to stick with Chantel. It may bite me, but Chantel's my person.
That is so funny because you and I did not talk ahead of time, but Pastor Chantel is mine. Yes. You're talking about the pastor, right?
Yes.
I'm going to call her the faster pastor. She is, I think that she's got all the stuff, at least from what we've seen. I think that she's wicked smart. She's clearly shown that she's super social. And she's willing to be really dirty. she is willing to get nasty. And the fact that she's got this kind of pastor title that she may or may not choose to hide behind that, because who would think that a pastor could be so devious? But she's got the scheming, devious kind of mind, and she ain't afraid to go there, right?
Right.
So I think she showed more skill and was more adept in this first episode than anybody else. You could stack two or three of the best in this episode. I still think they don't stack up against just one of her. So I'm with you 100%. Now, who is your backup?
So it was mainly as the episode went on, even though they are not in a great spot at the moment, just because of how hard they pushed them. The other person was also on the Green Tribe, JD. I just feel like they were making him so much of a presence in this episode. And you don't really see Survivor give that big of a presence unless you're the first boot. Or you go far.
Yeah. And that's where I'm going to say, as much as I agreed with Chantel, I'm going to totally disagree with you on that one.
And that's great.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything more than you do.
Right.
But I don't think he's going to go deep. I think he's going to end up being his own worst enemy. And he's going to keep putting his foot in his mouth. He's going to keep stepping in dog shit. And eventually, I don't think he's going to be able to recover. And part of that is because he's just a really, I love this about him. He's just this impetuous, he's got this zest for life. He just wants to enjoy all of it. He wants to talk about it. You know, he has a hard time kind of just reining himself in. And I think that's probably in real life, that's probably a beautiful quality, but I think it might hurt him in Survivor. So we'll see. I mean, I'd love to see him go far, but I have a feeling he might not. But I'd love to see him go far because I think he's really entertaining.
Exactly. And I think that's more of my, like, being a TV fan of him. I'm like, yeah, I want to see him go far. But that wraps up the premiere episode of Survivor 41. Believe it or not, guys, we are back. And next week, I know for sure Matt Bischoff will be back on the podcast for Survivor after the show goes off the air. We're still covering Big Brother with Brent Waugemann. That's hitting the finale, I believe, by next week. On Thursday, so starting tomorrow at 4:30, myself, Matt, Johnny, and Lauren will be back on to recap tonight's episode of The Challenge. Spies, Lies, and Allies. We'll see what came from the Fessy fight from last week. If you want to do it, please subscribe to the channel. Click that bell for notifications so you're aware of whenever we drop new podcasts. And click that like button. Let us know what you think. And if you don't like it, don't say anything. No need to put negativity in this world. We're all about positivity here. Be good. Be nice on the internet. And
yeah,
if you
can't
want,
we all just get along? Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, can't we all love, just get along?
Let's just love each other.
Right. And if you want to be more involved, become a patron at ad-free Reality NSFW. You would join the secret Facebook page for Reality NSFW. Johnny and Matt do Q&As with the patrons every week, and they are covering past seasons of Australian Survivor as Matt is watching them for the first time. All great content. So with that, we're going to put some closing ads, and we will see you next time.
See y'all. Thank you.
Autumn is in the air. The pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you don't carve your pants pumpkins when you're grooming, if you know what I'm saying. Make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new 4th generation performance package. Boys, get ready for cuffing season like no other. Ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with promo code SURVIVOR.
Now listen, I have had my fair share of mishaps in the past, and going into Halloween, the guys like to dress scary. The girls like to dress inviting. And as a result, you're bound to get your pants down if you do things right. Well, you don't want a big bush down there. You want those things freshly trimmed, shaved so perfectly. Don't use a razor. Go to Manscaped. It's the only way, or you will not be getting treats, but only tricks.
It's time to bundle up with the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies.
First off, the new Performance Package 4.0 includes the new Lawnmower 4.0. And if you're looking to cozy up this fall, this trimmer is essential.
Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. It also gives you the ability to turn a 4000 LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave, plus it's waterproof.
I hate shaving in the dark. That 4000 LED spotlight, perfect. But the Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. So you use the Lawnmower 4.0 for your rear, use this for your ear. This nose and hair trimmer uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system to provide proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps against nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes.
Seal the deal with Manscaped's liquid formulations. The Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. Everyone knows pumpkin spice lattes and ball deodorant go hand in hand.
That's all they're talking about at Target these days. It's crazy. Then after trimming the pumpkin patch and whacking the leaves, give your balls a boost and use the Crop Reviver. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and Shed Travel Bag. You see me on the road, I have the Manscaped Shed Travel Bag with me everywhere I go. Get comfy on the home and on the go this season.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code SURVIVOR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code SURVIVOR at manscaped.com. Make your balls a priority this fall. Choose Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Promo code SURVIVOR. I've been trying to cut down on carbs, sugar, and unhealthy food, and realize I basically can't eat anything anymore. I mean, I used to love eating that delicious cereal, but I can't. But wait, I can, thanks to Magic Spoon.
0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. That's only 140 calories a serving.
It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. Plus, build your own box. Available flavors to build your very own custom bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, cinnamon, cookies and cream, and my new favorite, maple waffle.
Magic Spoon just recently brought back two super popular flavors, cookies and cream and maple waffle, just like you're talking about, Johnny. Permanently. When these flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out extremely quickly. You should make sure to get these again and try them for the first time. They're delicious and indulgent.
Every morning I wake up, I look into my cabinets. All I have is Magic Spoon cereal. I have all the options. And I'll do a little bit of I'll mix some cookies of cream with a little cinnamon, maybe cocoa and peanut butter. But that maple waffle just by itself is just something so spectacular. Hey, they're perfect not only for breakfast, but that guiltless midnight snack.
So go to magicspoon.com/survivor to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code SURVIVOR at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's back with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/survivor and use promo code SURVIVOR to save $5 off. And thank you to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this podcast.